Coversals kickoff. This is Radio City Talk.
You might remember a couple of months ago we had a certain young gentleman in the studio who was planning to retrace the run that Forrest Gump ran in the film. Rob Pope was his name, from Merseyside, and he was doing it all in aid of a couple of charities. One of them was Peace Direct and one of them the World Wildlife Fund. I'm pleased to say his visa ran out, but he did complete one section of the run, over 2,000 miles. Welcome back home, Rob.
Cheers, nice to be
here. When did you land?
Got in on Saturday.
Saturday. So just remind us, where did the idea come from to actually do this run?
Well, I've always wanted to do something like, you know, run across America, you know, just basically see a country in a different way. But what I really wanted to do was to tie it up for some sort of charity thing. And then the idea of the Forrest Gump tie-up came, rather than just going from one side to the other. I figured people will identify with the film and hopefully respond to that and raise a load for charity. So I started in Mobile, Alabama, which is where, in the book, Forrest started from, because Greenbow, Alabama in the film doesn't exist.
Right. How many miles did you do in total?
2,230.
Which, if you equate it out to the number of days you were there, is sort of roughly what per day?
I was doing about 32 a day.
32. Not bad. Not bad at all. You still look in remarkably good physical shape, if I might say so. I was sort of expecting someone to walk in who was limping or holding his foot or something.
Yeah.
Have you got any real problem from having run over 2,000 miles?
I got a little bit of an Achilles niggle, but I had that for like the last 800 miles. So it's something that I can, keep an eye on and not be too silly. And so, like, my shoes at the end were starting to give up the ghost a bit, and I was having to run quite a lot on sand because it was either that or illegally on a motorway, so that wouldn't have helped.
Right, see, you had the same shoes that you started with that you finished with.
Four pairs, yeah.
Right, you went through four pairs of shoes in this space of time.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the run itself then. So where you started off, did you have any doubts in your mind at that point in time that you would complete it?
It was really, really hot and humid. Like, it was about 35, 36 in Alabama to start with, and like pretty much 100% humidity. So I was planning on changing my shoes every day, but I needed to change them like after every single run because you were audibly squelching with the sweat just running down your leg. I was thinking, I don't fancy this all the way, especially not going through the desert in Texas and Arizona. But then I picked up a shin injury in Texas, and that I thought that was going to be game over, really. I got a great physio, the Liverpool Physio Clinic in Speke, and called up Lee, top guy there, and was saying, like, what is going on? I've got this creak in my leg. And he was just like, well, that shows that there's actually some big inflammation there. It could be 6 to 8 weeks out. You know, you need to rest, but I know you're not going to rest. And so he said, just don't worry about the creak. It's all about increasing pain. And if you don't have increasing pain, you know, let that be your guide. And I got away with it.
We should say, and you said to me off air, you thought the creak was actually the chair you were sat on.
Yeah.
It was only when you stood up and started walking that the creak continued.
Exactly.
It was that audible?
Yeah, and you could feel it sort of vibrating up your leg. So I just sort of, when I was walking, I thought, this can't be good, you know.
Right. What was Team Rob Pope? So yourself, your girlfriend?
Yeah.
Anyone else?
Well, Jenny, our RV. So obviously named after Forrest's girlfriend. And we had a little competition to name her, but it was pretty unanimous. And I had a couple of friends who came out and did. I had one friend, sort of Rick, who came out, and he was actually there for 2 weeks. He did the whole of Arizona with us, and he's not a runner, but I sort of beasted him into doing 140 miles in total. So.
Oh, some friend you are. The climate change aspect of this, is that quite a problem for a run? I mean, you mentioned sort of the humid nature of where you started. How did it change throughout the course of the run?
It was pretty much like that until the first bit of Texas, and it started to get, it was actually just getting nice then, sort of. It was still hot around sort of 30, 31, but it was drier heat. Texas is just an incredible state. You really notice like the whole change in the environment, you know. So you start and it's fairly green, you see cotton fields, and then once you get past Austin, it just starts getting drier and browner. And we had to like to go from Austin to El Paso, which is about 400, 500 miles, and we went through oil country, so we'd see all like the derricks going up and down, huge trucks with dust. And then we went up to the Guadalupe National Park, which is like so out of the way, like even really Texans don't go there, you know. So it was like a weird green oasis before we then went down into El Paso, which is pretty much just what you imagine like a Mexican environment would be like. And New Mexico was incredible. Sort of, we ran across the whole of the state in 5 days. And we only went past one town. I think I saw four people, apart from just by the border, was we bumped into a travelling cycling troop, and they were like sort of going, oh, yeah, we're doing 400 miles. And I was like, oh, OK, I've done nearly 1,500. And, yeah, most of the people were just border guards, you know, sort of, because we were really close to the Mexican border. And then Arizona's great. We saw some of the proper giant cacti, you know, which are just incredible. Like, so they can be about like 50 foot tall and apparently weigh about 100 tons, you know. And so it's glad none of them.
Well, there's just areas that are covered in these.
Yeah, like sort of, it has to be like a certain altitude. And there's a park right by Tucson, Arizona, obviously famous for Get Back, you know. And there's just, it's really eerie. Like sort of, it was like sort of, you know, you see these like sort of shadows on the hills, and it's like almost as if like, you know, you can imagine proper, you know, sort of in the cowboy and Indian time, you know, sort of that there would be something hiding behind that wouldn't be too welcoming.
Are you just running along the side of the road all the time?
Yeah, like, yeah. Sort of, I would say sort of, yeah, like, so I did a few bits of trails, but it was only really when there was an interstate, which is their motorways, that you can't run on. I did actually run on the interstate for about 8 miles, where there was, you know, it was either that
illegally,
or, yeah, like sort of that or a 25-mile detour. So it's just like sort of head down. Like when I was crossing into Texas, there was a bridge, and so it was either that or a huge detour. And so basically, I had a rest just before we did it, and I was doing probably about 8 minute miles average. But I actually did one.
It's quite a pace then, really.
It was getting there, yeah. Like, I was stopping quite a bit to take photos and everything, but I did a 5:30 mile across that bridge.
So you had the energy to be able to pick it up and slow it down. It's one of the hardest problems, the psychology of this. Is there a little bit of loneliness in literally, yeah, that you're just running all day on your own?
It helped having Nadine there, because like so we tend to break the run up into, so the other days run into about like four or five runs, you know, so we make sure we were eating properly, because that's the real thing, just looking after yourself, because you don't want to stretch at the end of the day, you don't want to eat. Initially I just couldn't eat. I would take an hour and a half to actually like eat a burrito or something like that. Just because you know, your body's like going, what are you doing? Like, the most I'd ever run before I went was like 106 miles in a week, and then suddenly I was doing 250. And so that's why I'm keen to get out really quick, because I don't want that to fade away.
Right, because there's more of this journey to come. We're talking with Rob Pope. He's run 2,230 miles so far as part of the Forrest Gump route, raising money for the WWF and Peace Direct as well, and raising awareness. What was the scariest moment? There must have been a moment that where something happened, you know, that you thought, oof, am I in the wrong place, or yeah, a wild animal, or was there something that shocked you?
So there was quite a few, but like one that really sticks out was on the bridge over the Mississippi, a place called Baton Rouge, which is in Louisiana. And I was running over the highway 190. Now, there was no hard shoulder there at all. It was narrow lanes, rush hour traffic, lorries. And I was actually GoProing the video across. And like every now and again, like I'll do something, I'll think, oh, what will I say on the GoPro? So you got something to explain it. There was a lot of unplanned four-letter words as we were going across that bridge. And that was another 540 mile, because I was genuinely frightened. It's not that I'm like sort of brave or anything. I'm just, I'm an idiot. Nothing really bad's happened to me in my life, so therefore I'm not scared of a lot of stuff. That was genuine fear, you know.
Right, but that was trucks.
Yeah, it was
trucks. That was trucks putting the fear of God in you.
Yeah, when we were crossing the border into Louisiana, like sort of, I spoke to a garage owner, and he actually gave me like a free Powerade and an energy bar, and he said, if you hear gunshots when you're going sort of down that way, don't panic. It's squirrel season. Yeah. And so, yeah.
They go out killing the squirrels.
Yeah, and eating them as well. Yeah.
Oh, it's a delicacy, is it, down there?
I think it's just whatever they can catch, you know. but they're allowed to shoot them at this particular time. And so, yeah, like sort of, you do, you know, proper loud gunshots, and sort of, if you're not expecting it.
Did people know what you were doing? Did you get a fair bit of support, or was it?
A lot of people didn't really understand that. You know, you said, oh, I'm running across America. And because, like, they've got such a big traveling RV community over there, they just thought I was doing a run, you know, Sebastian, like, you know, going, driving from one side of the country to the other. And eventually, you know, if you explained it to them, they were pretty mind blown by it, especially like the people in Texas, because they're very aware how big the place is. And to be honest, it was actually when I got across Texas.
Well, put it into context, Texas compared to Great Britain.
Well, apparently you can fit 2.86 Great Britons in Texas. And the width of Texas that I did from Beaumont to El Paso was longer than Land's End, John O'Groats. And that was just one state.
That says quite a lot, doesn't it? Yeah. So the Americans are fairly sort of chirpy, nice people. I presume you had a lot of support then when you started telling your story.
They were great. Yeah, like I was obviously worried sort of what I'd find, like sort of out there. You know, you know about the Southern hospitality, but you just sort of have read reports of people who've been running across, not just America, like across continents before, and they've had people throw things at them from cars. But I never had any trouble. Like I had, you know, a couple of people in a bad mood generally, as you do when you're just in work, you know. But everybody was lovely. Like sort of that group of cyclists I was talking about before, they were doing a charity ride to try and raise money for like a literal feeding of the 5,000 they were doing, like sort of just over the Mexican border. And they gave us $100. And I was just like, you're doing a charity ride, can I not just give you it back? That's the thing. They were like, no, we, you know. And that was great. Like, so a little sort of old lady in a Waffle House, which if you get the chance to go to America, Waffle House are great. And she, like, gave us $10 and she was, like, looking through a purse trying to give us more. And we were like, no, you don't need to.
Now, you did this at the time of the US elections as well. So I'd imagine that was quite fascinating, running through all these different states and seeing the amount of publicity Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump, we're getting the amount of sort of bickering and fighting between them. Was that a fascinating backdrop to what you were doing?
One thing I was actually reassured, because we knew we were in the southern states, so chances are it was going to be Republican, much more Trump. I think I saw 4 Hillary Clinton posters the whole way across. 1 Bernie Sanders in Austin, of course, because Austin's a little bit unusual, you know, and so. But the amount of support for Trump there, but the. What was reassuring is the Republican voters weren't happy. They weren't like, sort of, yeah, Trump's going to save the world. He's going to make America great again. They were just going, I can't believe that this is the best we've got to offer. Like some of them were even like contemplating voting Democrat that they'd never done before. And we were actually in Tombstone, Arizona on the night of the election, which is where they had the gunfight at the OK Corral.
And, quite aptly.
Yeah, and so we did like a little bit of a bar crawl, and sort of we ended up in this one at the end of the night where the barman was called Forrest, unbelievably. When the writing was on the wall, the owner of the bar was just like, he was quite pleased at the result, and he said, right, let's get everybody in the bar shots. You know, so he was getting free drinks on the house. And Nadine just said to me, come on, we're going.
She pulled you out.
Yeah, so we politely made our excuses and left, you know.
What a historic time for the country, though. And what a strange time for you to be doing your run through it as well.
Like, I'm actually, one of the reasons why I'm keen to carry on, apart from the obvious reasons, is basically just to see how it pans out, you know, because I think being like sort of a foreigner in the country, like sort of being able to sort of see it, you know, not from any political lines, and then just watching it unfold, I think over the next year is going to be, well, it could be incredible in a number of ways, maybe not for the best, you know.
Right, we'll get onto your return journey in just a second. When we caught up with you on your phone on your run, you said you'd just come across some mad roadkill.
Yeah.
You'd seen all sorts. Crocodile, I think you said?
Alligators there, snakes, armadillos.
Well, alligators just been run over.
Yeah, and it was a big one as well. You're talking 5 foot, you know, sort of.
And where was that?
That was in Mississippi. Yeah, like sort of, it was real sort of swamp country. I was listening to a lot of Creedence when I was there, you know. So it felt very apt, you know.
Did you have headphones on all the time, did you?
Pretty much,
Pretty much listening to music all day.
Yeah.
So what tunes got you through?
I would quite often just have it on shuffle. There were certain days where, like, so I remember I had a Bob Dylan, Neil Young binge one day when I was running through New Mexico, which is crazy. And I was actually, it was just as we came into New Mexico, I'd refused to put Born to Run on by Bruce Springsteen unless the shuffle selected it.
I love that.
Well, yeah, and it came on, and I was just running past a road sign, and it was Highway 9, which is mentioned in the song, and I was just like, you know,
spooky coincidences. Yeah, exactly. Another one. Another one. How did it feel when you crossed that finishing line, when you knew you'd finished what is essentially the first segment of your challenge?
Yeah, the weird thing is, like, sort of, it was almost more excitement when we actually got to, you know, just over the Alabama border, which is about 3 or 4 days in. And, like, sort of, Texas was, you know, just seeing the sign for New Mexico, that was incredible. It was a little bit staccato, the finish, because we were meeting up with an LA news crew, KTLA, and it was, like, proper, as you'd imagine, American news broadcast, you know, and sort of, like, she was amazing, Casey. But then, of course, it was lots of filming and can you do this? And it's so, you know, it's not like the pier that you imagine for sort of forest run down, because it's a huge tourist attraction. Lots and lots of people there. And so we got to the end and it was a little bit of like, excuse me, can you move? just while I get this photo, you know. And once, actually, the best bit was getting off the pier and then just running into the Pacific, because we'd taken a little sample of the Atlantic water from Bayou La Batterie, which is, of course, where Bubba Forrest's friend was from. And then that just, you know, properly dived in. It was pretty cold. It was like sort of a Blackpool in October, you know.
Wow, you've had a few weeks to try and get the body recovered, but you want to do it all again. So this is the first of 5 challenges.
That's the plan, yeah.
So the 5 challenges would be what?
So the next leg would be from Los Angeles, going through Death Valley, Vegas, to the East Coast, Washington, New York, Boston, and we would turn around at the Marshall Point Lighthouse in a place called Clyde in Maine, which is, of course, where Forrest turned around for the second time. We then head back and sort of go through Detroit, Chicago, try and get over Montana, which is where they filmed a lot of the mountain scenes in Forrest Gump, by August for obvious temperature reasons. Get to San Francisco in September, try and get over the Rockies before the huge snowfall, then get to the Carolinas, and then eventually turn round, go back through Texas, Arizona, and finish in Utah in Monument Valley. And
that would be another 4 segments of this story.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like probably about another 13,000 miles to go.
Oh, that's nothing to you, Rob. You've done 2,230.
The worst bit was the first 500. You know, yeah. Steve, after that, like, Steve, you're no more tired than at a day, you know, a big day at work. It just, and a lot of it was like, I likened it to a Formula One driver, like just having to look after the tires and the fuel, because it was, you could run faster, and as you were going along, you'd notice your minute per mile pace, like over a week or two, getting quicker and quicker. But then a niggle would happen, so you were quite often having to, like, just say, stay to this pace, you know.
My niggles generally happen after about 3 miles, Rob, not 500.
Yeah.
Look, it's a brilliant story. And when you're ready to embark on your second leg, we'll talk to you again about that. But well done. And you are raising money for the WWF, World Wildlife Fund, and Peace Direct. If anyone wants a bit more info on you, is there a
yeah,
website or a...
There's a website, which is goingthedistancerun.com. If you just do goingthedistance.com, it takes you to a Chevy dealer. So you always remember to put go in the distance run. But if you just Google Rob Pope, Forrest Gump, you'll probably find some things. Because if you can, lots of likes on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook, that's what it is. Because we're desperate to get a corporate sponsor for the next leg, because it's currently cost $25,000, which is basically our house deposit gone.
Which is a lot of money. And you are doing it for a good cause.
Yeah, exactly. So we're not bothered about the money we spent, but if we're going to carry the 5 legs, we're going to need some help. So.
Right, I'm sure you'll get it out there. Brilliant story. Thank you very much indeed, Rob. The Kickoff with Steve Hothersall on Radio City Talk.